This is an interesting, oh, by the way, establishment is traditional, is Christianity, so those words are coming up. What is traditional? Practices, roles, values, viewpoints. Okay, those are the euphemisms that are used to hide the fact of what they're really saying with their sentences. When you say, well, we believe in traditional values, they're saying, well, we believe in Christian values, or we're against traditional values, that means they're against Christian values. So we'll show that in our lesson this evening. Interesting lesson to put together. I put it together, and I was done. I said, I need to introduce my lesson. So I went back and added 19 more slides in front of it. So anyway, so we have the introduction and then the real lesson. I hope this makes sense to you. So we have these preliminary marks. And again, I must thank you for enduring these lessons. They have been a joy, in a sense, for me after they're done. I've learned a boatload of things. In fact, what I've learned is that I really need to study this some more but I don't know that I will, because there's a certain point where you don't want to get too deep into the weeds. But anyway, it's been helpful to observe the world we live in, having studied the underpinnings of what they are doing out there. So this series is called Wonderfully Made, you know, and I will remind you this last time of what we're doing here. My comments have not been political, and today's lesson, I must repeat that, because it would seem sometimes that it is. We have refrained from talking about politics, political parties, and labels used to describe them. We have talked about, however, what is right and what is wrong. I think that becomes biblical territory, because it's based on what the Bible teaches directly, or what the Bible implies, as we have implied, for what God meant for his creation. And we have camped for a while on this issue of the mandate. Exactly what is the mandate? What is involved in filling the earth? What is involved in subduing the earth? We have seen a female aspect in the filling and a male masculine aspect in the subduing the earth. Now, the church does not deal with politics, and we say amen, brother. However, the dilemma of our present culture is that everything has been turned into political maneuverings. My fear is that if morals can be turned into politics, then even morals cannot be addressed by the church. Hardly. It's hardly the position the church or the Christians should be in. We are to be the salt and we are the light. We are, by our very presence, a factor in our culture. Even though there's no political structures promoting morality, we still provide an obstacle for immorality. The objective of this series is not to organize opposition to the evils of this age, but to inform you, and this is really my purpose statement, to give you the tools to evaluate your surroundings and make judgments that are appropriately made by an informed Christian mind. So we do live in strange times. That was my preliminary remarks to my preliminary remarks. We live in strange times. I heard somebody say that on the radio this week, that everybody is somewhat unsettled. We are living in strange times, but we are living in a relatively peaceful time. In the United States, we've been at war in the Far East some, but you know, it's sort of like a quiet war. It's not like World War I or World War II. Or even the Korean War or the Vietnam War. So in some sense, we are at peace, mostly. But there is an unrest in the land, because there is a reordering of American Christian life. And these are the challenges to the freedoms and the prosperity, which I believe are built on biblical economic realities, which have been the subject of our entire course. We are told that everything has progress. This is those that would support a socialistic idea. We're told that everything is progress, that discomfort is necessary to get things better. So, chin up, bear with it. We are being told in socialism that too much focus has been on the individual, whereas the individual is obligated to the group who takes care of the individual. Got the cycle reversed. The group then replaces God as the providential caregiver. The place of Christianity in society must be diminished, it says, they say, because of its majority status. The place of Christianity in society must be diminished because of its majority status. In its place, the rights of the non-Christian minorities rise disproportionately to the controlling status. For example, a manger scene is removed from a city where it has displayed it for maybe 100 years because one atheist objects. By the way, this is a misuse of a Christian principle of deferring to the weaker brother. And perhaps that's why this is allowed. This juxtaposition empowers the non-Christian minority to write the social agenda or the political agenda. Once minority rule is allowed, there can be no majority rule. Even laws passed by the Christian majority can be overruled by the courts. We are living, I like the verse in Psalm 2:3, let us tear their fetters apart and cast away the cords from us. This is the pagans saying about God and his restraints. We are living in what is called the postmodern world, a world of no accepted revelation from God. That is what a postmodern world is. As a result, there are no absolutes. There are no rights and no wrongs. And we see this shift in the 1960s. I was at K-State at that time, and I noticed all the hippie on our, I was a college campus, kind of a conservative one, but we were very well aware of what was going on in our culture. I didn't identify with it. I was in school to learn something. So we saw the shift, or see the shift in the 1960s, and in our generation, if you're 54 years old or older, you're in this generation. Younger, you would have missed it, but you probably were aware of it. The enemy is the establishment for this generation, that 60s group. The establishment is the enemy. Or authority. Remember, sometimes when you resist authority, you've seen those bumper stickers, it's the same kind of thing. Okay, the enemy is the establishment they appeal to, which they say is, a law higher than man-made law. See, a law that is higher than man-made law would have to be God's law. Okay, right? That's what they're appealing to. They didn't use the word God, but see, it's higher than man-made law. This is what they're objecting to. The establishment, depending on higher law, that's us, must be overthrown in order to shake off its oppression. Christianity is seen as an oppression on the world. When the liberation from Christianity seemed possible, the first generation of the 1960s, of those revolutionaries, were bomb-making, bomb-placing, hostage-taking revolutionaries. Some of you guys don't remember this, but the Weather Underground, led by Bill Ayer, set bombs, was willing to pick up guns for the cause of overthrowing the establishment. Again, establishment means Christianity. It was in 1971 that Saul Alinsky, 1909-1972, see, he died a year after he published his book. I wonder if God noticed that. It was in 1971 that Saul Alinsky, a Jew, by the way, published his Rules for Radicals. In it, he suggests that a revolution of bombing and shooting will never succeed because it's too bloody. A more measured approach is necessary, else the establishment, by sympathy, will gain power and overcome the revolution. And the word revolution is used 100 times in this book, and it may not always be in this text, but the revolution in some pages occurs 10 times. So revolution was what was on their mind. It was not going to be a revolution by bombing. It was going to be a revolution of a more measured variety. So what is a more measured approach? Well, organize people into groups around any issue. You can watch this. Organize people around people into groups around any issue. It did not matter what the issue was. Whatever you could find that would have some kind of community support. And then when you have that issue, then find other people that agree with that grievance. Add to your group. And then go out and stir public support for this grievance and amass, with this group now, a voting block, voting blocks to vote in support of your cause. That's the basic system. then once you have assembled your team, you're able by de facto be their leader. Who else are they going to follow? You put it together, they're your people. So number four, you're able to move them towards larger goals than some small community thing by peaceful, nonviolent organizing, no bombs. All right. So my first experience, and I was flabbergasted when I met my first community organizer in Fort Collins, Colorado. We were moving our kids to Lincoln, and he came over to help us move. And he said, men always do this. What do you do? What's your job? What do you work at? Oh, I'm a community organizer. And what's that? I don't know that I still knew what it was, but now I do know what it is. And guess what? He was coming over to help somebody move. Guess what that would mean? You're building these contacts. Okay. Now, maybe he was just such a nice guy. I don't know. But since he was a community organizer, I have ulterior motives in my mind for him. Now, last night, now maybe I'm going to get some people mad at me for this all before I'm done tonight, I suppose, but that's okay. I'll forgive you. Last night on our local television channel, we saw a demonstration for higher minimum wage. Did anybody see that? Did you notice that those people that they interviewed most were so old they didn't have a job that they even worried about minimum wage? Who got them there? Exactly right. Somebody got them there. And I bet you if you go to that group and find out who's your leader here, there would be somebody. It wasn't a very big group, and it wasn't a very powerful group, but they were there for causes that they had no interest in. But they had learned to say certain things. And we'll get into minimum wage and other kind of stuff later on. But maybe we will. Oh, wait. So in other words, there's an example that I just noticed last night. Oh, that's interesting. Why are these people have interest in minimum wage? They don't even have a job. So this is from their words, from Saul Alinsky's book. He describes what an organizer is. The organizer, the revolutionist, the activist, or call him whatever you will, who is committed to watch how they use these words, recommitted to a free and open society, is in that commitment anchored to a complex of high values. Remember, he's rejected the higher than us values. They're looking at high values. So I got to translate this for you. Translated, the organizer will be against oppressive Christianity because oppressive Christianity is not an open, free society because it's oppressed, because Christianity puts restraints on people. But will be committed to change, to embrace higher human values, not going back to the high values of God. These are higher human values. Well, we have seen what these are in our study. Equality of everything, for example, freedom from the fear of sin, which we'll develop a little bit later. And I think this is a key issue here. I've not used this before, but this idea that what they really want, these people that are opposed to Christianity, really want to be is free from the effects of sin. If they're sinners, they don't want to be responsible for anything that would happen to them because they were sinners. Goes on. Now, this is a new one for you. Means and ends are so qualitatively interlaced that the true question has never been the proverbial one, the one we learn from the Bible, which is, does the end justify the means? And we always say no. But always has been, he says, he's disagreeing with that, does the particular end justify this particular means? So they reversed it. Translating, the end does justify the means if the end is important enough. Morality is not a factor. There is no standard for it. They would agree to that. Remember one of my offers I gave to you a few weeks ago who was in the resistance movement in the 60s, came out of it, and the first thing he ever thought about that was wrong here was that they told him, I'll read this to you. One author I use first became suspicious when he realized that he had been told that lying would be acceptable in the course of what they were promoting. And this guy at this point was only 13 years old. He remembers that. He was as an adult into the movement, but he looked back on that. That caused me wonder, why would we have to lie about what we're doing? Well, they have no scruples about that because the end justifies the means. Okay, the target of peaceful revolution, the primary moral obligation of a revolutionary, this is still a quote, is to destroy the existing political, social political framework in order to prepare the revolutionary future. And radicals perceive America as the principal defender of capitalism, which translates out into freedom and prosperity, Christianity. They hate that, and they hate it all over the world. So they hate Christianity so much, they will forego the personal benefit of it. They're willing to destroy prosperity in order to gain their ill-conceived freedom. And we know that freedom is never achieved because it really is a form of slavery. So the lines are drawn on the issue of revelation again. Christianity is built on revelation. I'm not talking about the book in the Bible. I'm talking about the phenomenon that God has revealed himself to us. So I've set this up as background for the conflict we see being waged in our country. The opposing side pivots clearly on the point of Christianity, and the euphemism for it is the establishment. Who else in America except Christianity would be the establishment? Now, today, America is the last major stronghold of Christianity. Now, I have to agree and I have to admit that it has been imperfectly practiced, which has given our enemies, so to speak, a foothold in the opposition. They point to things that are wrong in America, things of greed and selfishness and so forth that we all disagree with. But it is not core Christianity. Therefore, we are subject to the all-out effort to destroy Christianity in the nation, co-opting the people for progressive, liberal, I should have used the word socialistic ideals. Some great ideal. We know the hope of Christianity, but notice the hope of the progressive ideals. This is sobering. This is a philosophy of life, I guess. We live in a world, Saul Alinsky says, we live in a world where good is a value dependent on whether we want it. Now remember we said in our making things, to create wealth, you have to make something that somebody else wants. They must understand that what you make is good for them. That's what he's saying here. We live in a world where the good that you want is a value dependent on whether that we want. I mean, we establish what's good because we want it. That's a wrong standard. I don't know what other standard there is. But that's what he says. We live in a world where good is a value dependent on whether we want it. It's true. In the world as it is, the Christian world as it is, as he sees it at least, the solution of every problem invariably creates a new one. Probably true. In the world as it is, there are no permanent happy or sad endings. In the world as it is, there are no permanent happy or sad endings. I don't think that's true. Such endings belong to the world of fantasy, where there are happy and sad endings. The world as we would like it to be, the world of children's fairy tales, where they lived happy ever after. I mean, I read that right. I think he was trying to say, in the world as it is, there are no permanent happy or sad endings. Such endings belong to the world of fantasy. So we say there's a good or a bad ending, and that's a world of fantasy. That just isn't true. Remember, this is his life story here. So with this issue of freedom and self-interest is wiped off the map. Christianity offers life, wipes that off the map. It goes on. The world as it is, the stream of events surges endlessly towards onwards with death as the only terminus. That's what he says it is. Well, I would say that means it's meaningless. One never reaches the horizon, he says, it is always just beyond, ever beckoning onward. It is the pursuit of life itself. And I say that's called hopelessness. So the world, this is the world as it is, he says. And he says, this is where you start. I'm not sure why you'd even want to start. And I say, this is the world of Christianity. So this is what we have to overthrow this. To me, it doesn't make a lot of sense, and maybe it doesn't to you either. And if it doesn't, I'm glad, because whatever. So here we are. They want to trade our Christianity for that madness, that uselessness, that purposelessness. There's no answer to anything. We just live and die. And somehow we start out somewhere and do something. That's it. That's very what we call existential. It's everything. Whatever you do today is the only thing that matters. So here's where the lesson started, see? So we come to the end of our economic series. Now it is time to pull together the implications of what we have learned. Slow down, Don. Suppose we encounter a person from another planet. I know we can't, but let's just suppose. It would not take very long for him to ask questions about why things are the way they are on this earth. And we now are, class, able to explain what is important by detailing the five earth impacting events. And I wouldn't ask you to do it, but we know what they are. Four of them are judgments. But for what for, he might ask. Well, however good these explanations are, they do not say anything about purpose of it all. For that answer, we go to the antiquities. We call it the Bible, earliest writing ever. To the beginning of time, Genesis 1:28. We have the Genesis mandate given to God's created ones who will live in the world made for him. Men in the division of male and female are to fulfill the work of the employment mandate. Do something. Produce children, fill the earth, to subdue it, make something, make it better, harness it, utilize it for the benefit of man. Ultimately, to show the Creator's power and majesty, which we sometimes just say for his glory. The mandate is carried out by the effort of man's productive labor. And it goes like this. A young child can piece together a puzzle. Man has been endowed with creative abilities to make it possible for him to complete the mandate. He sees these puzzles laying around and says, oh, I think I can make something out of this. The guy in our illustration made a walking stick. But what motivates man to put forth the effort? Well, it is through an interest in his own well-being. Sometimes it's called self-love. Can't deny self-love. We better have it. Not that we should promote it, but it exists. We care for ourselves. This will also include his family, for which he is responsible. Now, observing this motivation fits well. The pattern set by the Creator who acted in self-interest in creating the world and man in it. We say God did it for his glory. Is that not self-interest? As man is created in the image of God, he is in the image of God also endowed with the measure of creating ability. Remember, God started out by created matter out of nothing, created the worlds out of nothing. And then when he had something, what did he do with it? He made something of it. Although we always talk about the 6 days of creation, he probably didn't create every day. Once he had created the matter, then it was a matter of making something out of it. That's kind of the pattern we expect to follow in our subduing the earth. Man with his innovating ability can conceive of something better in his mind, which in a sense is creating it. You imagine something that doesn't exist. Some people are better at this than others are. They're called inventors. And then make it. And to make something that somebody else wants, not junky watercolors. Well, what conditions? Well, we can explain to our visitor that in order for these creative efforts to succeed, there must be freedom to act with a guarantee that what he has produced will remain in his control. That's the issue of private property rights. Further, the surpluses are sold for more than it costs to produce, else you wouldn't be doing this. This provides a raised standard of living. Remember, Helsinki ridiculed this. The good I want. He ridiculed anything like that. So the wealth created by man's innovation makes it possible to produce even more goods that people want, thus ever expanding the wealth of man, his family, and even the nation. So we end up with this. We never did figure out what city this is. That doesn't matter. We end up with, I call this beautiful picture. It is glorious. Now, we don't need to look underneath the streets, look at the sewers, or the rats running around there, but we look at the city that has been achieved. It is a marvel. You go in those buildings and the elevators go up. They take you to the right floor, usually. You know, go on, you push a button and the lights come on. You push another button and the air conditioning comes on. You turn the faucet and the water comes on. I mean, you just do all those things and that happens in all of those buildings. Evolution can never produce something like that. So I say it's a beautiful place. What man can build is a beautiful place. And what God said about the people of the garden, the Tower of Babel, says what they conceive in their mind, they will get to do. And that is the expanding ability of man's creativity. And we just see this in cities. So we call this a beautiful picture. A people who produce more than what they need boost the wealth to build incredible cities. Now, is this a beautiful picture? Our visitor has seen that prosperity has not been uniformly accomplished in the world. In some places, there is little prosperity realized. But yet, even here, on the right, somebody built a shack. And it does take the water out a little bit. You may have to live with rats, but at least there is some protection. He just doesn't have much prosperity to make it better. Doesn't have air conditioning, you can count on that. But in the perverted world, guess what? This is the polluted part. And I say, this is the polluted part. But this is the part that's never mentioned. It's always the developed world is the pollution part. So, not a beautiful picture, really. So anyway, we go on to explain why everything is not beautiful. We must consider the enemy who opposes the Creator God. That unseen God of this world causes havoc at every level of human existence, and in levels you haven't even thought about yet. So as a result, what ought to be is not often the way it is. It is not a perfect world. We have the five judgments that show that. So our visitor asks wisely, if and where and when has this mandate been implemented? And we answer, in America. Imperfectly, yes, but most successfully, more successfully there than anywhere else in the world. America is a unique nation. It is founded on Christian nation. We talked about that last week, Psalm 33:12. It is formed on Judeo-Christian principles and laws, governed by the principles of the Jewish God-given laws, whose constitution is built on those laws, provides its citizens a necessary freedom with guaranteed property rights to build a prosperous society. It's been done in America, nowhere else. And who do we give thanks to? We give thanks to the Lord. And the Lord says that in Psalm 33:12, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, the people whom he has chosen for his own inheritance. Not the Jews in this case, this is the Gentiles. So America is a Christian nation, and we explained that last week. If you weren't here, as they always say, get the tape. I have not always said this. I wasn't sure what I should say about America being a Christian nation, but when we talk about how it was formed and how it was built and how it functions, what holds it together, even to this day, we'd have to say it is a Christian nation because it's not Muslim, it's not Buddhist, it's not Hindu, it's not atheistic. So the best thing we got going for it is it's Christian. And the founders of this nation were, by great percentage, maybe two-thirds Presbyterian Calvinists. Doesn't mean every one of them was a saved person. They sometimes make them deists. I'm not sure some might have been. But they understood the value of the Bible and what it taught. And they resourced it all the time in the forming of the documents that run our nation. That's why I'm saying it's a Christian nation. So Christianity historically is the green. You see, it's the Western Europe and spills over into the North America, Brazil, strongly Christian, compared to other parts. We skip on the other place in Africa. We also have this report card America, where Christianity historically has provided the most freedom. We also see out of Britain, the areas that used to be the British Empire, but down in Australia and so forth, they're blue, and North America, so forth. So that's where we have historic freedoms. We see this map. This is our division of the labor with the feminine implications, the masculine implications. So let's talk about the mandate in America. Because of the Christian foundation, America has been most responsive to the mandate. As a result, it has provided the most desirable place to live in the world. Okay, because of the Christian foundation, America has been the most responsive to the mandate. As a result, it has provided the most desirable place to live in the world. Now, I start looking up certain ways of measuring desirability to live. And I looked at gross domestic product. I also looked at the Freedom Index. And then I start looking at how those guys come up with those figures. And they're always going to be biased because of what you front load the question with. So I'm going to do it just the simple way. Where would you like to live? Question. Well, when you ask that question, where do you want to live? America. All right, so that's my scientific opinion poll. So, but whatever measurement used, biased or incomplete, as GDP or the Freedom Index, so forth, the desire to immigrate is still the best test for or of a successful nation. In other words, where do people want to live? America is still that place. They may ridicule it, but in the end, they still want to live here. Reflecting on our opening comments, however, because of its Christian foundation and its moral principles, America is the target for disruption by the spoiler. There is, in the battle for the nation, those who seek to change it from a Christian nation to a secular nation, and I say do this at their own peril, not understood by the revolutionaries, who are dismantling the God-given structures, family, home, and government, and institutions which made America great. What they propose will result in a return to a caveman existence. The same is charged if Christianity prevails, they say. Well, we keep being Christians, we'll be back in the caveman. Everybody's going to be back, you know, the women are going to be dragged around by the hair and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So they make the same charge, but it has already been proven. Christianity has already been proven that that's not true. In fact, the opposite. So the trick is, as they always use it, the trick is to charge the Christians with the consequence of their own scheming. It's always the way it is. What they charge us of, Christians, that's exactly what they're proposing for themselves, for the culture that they supposedly are defending. So we return to the primitive natural earth conditions. Well, of course, there is a romantic idea of living close to earth and to enjoy nature's beauty. You know, we know about nature doesn't have a personality. But we think about the streams, the mountains, and the pretty pictures. Who's that guy that painted that lived in North Dakota? Redgen? No. Christian guy. Did a lot of painting of mountains. Beautiful stuff. I have one picture. So we have nature's beauty, the streams, the mountains, where there is no danger, where there is little competition. I should say no competition. No inequity, only peace and tranquility. That's where we're going, folks. However, as we have said, this land only exists at the end of the pen of a fiction writer's novel. It's the only place it exists. Because you remove his roof, empty his refrigerator, bury one of his children, and a beautiful nature soon turns into an ugly adversary. So this natural world that's so beautiful does not exist. What about the ever-present forces of destruction? Can they not see the value of freedom, I think? Well, what drives men to such perversions that they would risk it all by living with Mother Nature and equality rather than accept the providence of a caring creator who's provided so well? Well, in the fallen world, there is only one answer that makes sense to the rebellious. They see the world as a dangerous place, not because of the aforementioned four judgments, but because he wants to make the world safe for his sin. He'll do anything to allow him to have his sin. A world where he is never held accountable for his sin, for this he is willing to lose it all to have the freedom, a release from his obligation to the Creator God. Now, I don't know, some of you became believers when you were adults, and maybe some of these thoughts were in your mind. I don't know. But it seems to be in the mind of those that fight Christianity tooth and nail. Well, we say, deceived again. Given all up to make the world safe for sin? Well, for him it is to make the world safe for sin, but also to deny as of any value all that the Creator God has provided him in the promise made through the mandate, the prosperity and the progeny. He doesn't want anything to do with any of it. The deception is you can have it both ways. Those that advocate a return to nature never see themselves as the common folk living in the caves or tents, but they are a unique people, a privileged elitist class who will oversee the common folk, whoever they are, but it's not them. So they expect to have it both ways. Obviously another deception by the spoiler. Well, can we take these folks seriously? I say yes, because they are serious. We have seen in these sessions that the alternative to personal responsibility, the fill and subdue, is rejected in socialism, which is an alternative system to freedom. Socialism praises the group and excuses the individual. We have seen the failure of this system time and again, starting with Harmony, Indiana. But again, it still remains the only alternative to making the world a safe place for sinning. Therefore, socialism underpins all alternative models for humans and the progress towards a utopian hope. So how does this battle get engaged? As I started out, say, pick a grievance. These are three steps. You can remember them and go home and start practicing it if you want to be a rebel. Pick a grievance, any grievance. When we lived at 70th and Vine, 70th and, where do we live? 7th and A, in that corner, there was a lady that ran for office. She was our neighbor for the political office in our city, for city council. And I think this is exactly what she was doing. She went around her neighborhood to find something that wasn't right. She discovered that at that particular intersection, there were three intersections that are owned by property owners. And there was one intersection owned by Lincoln East High School. Well, the little association there on the southwest corner clock tower had put together a little promotion package, and so they put up these little standards with little flags on them. So they put them in all four corners, even on school property. I never once thought about that. Well, that's on private property. They can't do that. That is an infringement of... Well, she made that an issue. And it never went anywhere, except the school had to take them down, but she never got elected to office. But I often wondered about that. That's an example of picking an issue that might resonate in the community around which you can build a coalition from which you can lead them to bigger events. Because, removing some flags on the 84th and 70th and A, not really a big fish to fry. But it's the beginning point, and that's how this works. So, and what it does also, it disrupts. It disrupts what's ordinarily accepted. I mean, it didn't hurt anybody, this particular thing, and most other things don't either. But so it's a disruption is part of it, the unsettling it. So that's step number two. You pick an issue, you upset the community, which means that they are now confused. And when this is step number two, and when they're confused, they're really confused what really is right or what is really good. Now you got them right where you want them. Because now all you need to do is the last stage is to tell them what's right. That's wrong. You're confused. Now let me tell you what's right. And you make your case. So you have this disrupt the present order, confuse what is truly good. And there's a lot in Christianity. See? Apply it. Then promote the new social equality, which is their one way of doing it, with no want or need, only peace. And we have established a new good. Those are the three steps. Not hard to remember. That's why it's so easy. So we have now, how does this work out? We talked about the feminine implication. We did a little bit this other week. And every one of these issues need at least a day to work on or a night to talk about. And I'm just going to run through them and just leave it at that. Plenty of time for you to do your own work, I guess. So for one, in the feminine aspect of it, limit population. Limiting population brings poverty to the nation. The Bible says that the treasures of our lives are our children. If you have no children, people that don't have children know that. But with those of us that have children look at them as problems to get rid of as soon as possible. Now we make jokes. But without our children, especially at our age, they're wonderful people after all. Took a while for them to become wonderful. When they got married, it seemed like everything just straightened out. What did that smooth everything out? They're going to act up in front of their husbands. No. Make them look bad. Okay, limiting population brings poverty to the nation. How do they limit population? By aborting, by killing the unborn. I told you about my cousin had a hysterectomy because she was not going to have children. We have tubal litigations, vasectomies. I'm one of those. I'm not trying to preach to anybody. But the truth of it is, we had three children, and there weren't going to be any more. At least if I was the father. And my wife's trustworthy, so we're stuck with three kids. But just think about this a little bit. I have thought about this. Think about this. Now, the gay life produces no offspring, does it? Now, don't give me this in vitro fertilization. That's a lot of work and very expensive. By gay marriage, it produces no offspring. Delaying birth for higher education, careers, convenience, so on and so forth, produces or delays offspring and reduces the number of offspring. Regulating birth in overcrowded conditions like China. limiting resources. We can't have any more children in this country because we can't support them. All those kind of ideas were fallacious. These are for poverty reasons, any of the above, based on the wisdom of man. By deception, it is said that the earth will not sustain more life. And I remember in Israel, when they were trying to take immigration back into Israel, they only allowed 10,000 into the land. In fact, they didn't make their quota because they decided that the land could not support more than 10,000 people. Now, if they only known that, they wouldn't have had 7 million over there now. Can you imagine the difference? 10,000, that was immigration, so I don't know how many they had, a couple million, probably at the most. So there's always room for us one more. In fact, nations that have more than they need, what do they do with their surplus? They go colonize somewhere. America's a great colonization place. And Britain produced a lot of kids, and a lot of them came here. Germans produced a lot of kids, and a lot of them came here. Got the point? So on our Time magazine, we got the child-free life. This is within the last year. And on the middle of the page here, we have America's birth rate at 2. Do it that way. We have 2 children. It's actually 2.11 now per woman. And you see down in UK, 1.9, Norway, 1.8, China, 1.6, Germany, 1.4, and Russia, I told you, 1.5. And I have some different number. That's why I hate these statistics, because it depends on who's doing it and when they measured it. But I've seen Russia as low as 1.1. Then I wonder, what is Putin doing over there anywhere? You know, I got more to say on that. I'm going to do it right here. So, all right. Childless women in 1976, 1 out of 10. Childless women in 2010, 1 out of 5. Doubled number of childless people, percentage-wise. This is America. This is America, a wonderful America. So you see, these things don't happen overnight. These shifts over time. So this is the same Time magazine, children, none. And this over here is enough, you know, this whole idea of children. So nations in population decline become dangerous to the world. I'm watching Putin here a little bit. I know Russia is declining their population. I'll say it somewhere, I'll say it now again. I said, one thing that a socialist government does not want is no population. Because guess what? Who you tax? Who do you tax? So in some sense, they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot, the old proverbial foot. Russia is one such declining nation where the birth rate is 1.2, and I just put the dates because there are other statistics show it differently. It's higher now in the 2009. So I see these statistics are hard to track because we've got these Muslim territories in Russia that produce at a higher rate, much higher rate. And Mark Stein's book on America alone is a great book if you can read it, if you can stand his humor. I can handle it when he talks, but when you read it, it's hard. Birth rates at 1.3 in theory will halve the population every 35 years. So if Russia's population in 1999 was 143 million, by 2049, which will be in the lifetime of some of you, young guys, it'll be 73 million. That's not good for a nation. Have you noticed? Also, they don't allow adoptions anymore. In fact, I just read, and I couldn't find it again, that they also mandated that Ukraine was not going to send out any more adoptions. Now, one place I said I read that they weren't going to send adoptions is Russia out to gay countries that recognize gay marriages. But I also know that in some ways this is not a politically correct thing to do, so they're kind of quiet about this. But getting a child out of Russia used to be relatively easy. At least you could have money and you could get it done. But Russia is now starting to hold on to their people. You know, and sometimes people would say, well, what interest does a nation have in gay marriage? Why do they support it? I said, well, they have a great interest in it because gay marriage has produced no children. The government should have interest in marriage because it's producing their next generation. Oh, but it's just a few. Remember, every little bit counts. Now, the problem besides the few people, the problem is that the old population will outnumber the young. And I'm measured now in the old population. So it becomes like this, top heavy. And few people are supporting these people over here. And all you got left is the old people who don't do anything except take. The young people provide for them. Oh, isn't that wonderful? But it becomes bad for the nation if there aren't more people coming up from the bottom. Okay, the problem is that the old population outnumbers the young. This is a decline in the population to tax. Horrors to socialism. The spiral will take a people out of nationhood status who become vulnerable to other people. And Islam is a growing group, at least for now. And they're worried about them taking over Europe. That's why they'll never, like Turkey, they said Turkey will never be part of NATO because of the Islam. Because once you get into Turkey, part of Europe. Once they're part of Europe, there's no borders. They can come right on in. They need to have borders to keep the Muslims out. So socialism needs a large population to feed on. They cannot sustain themselves. A declining population becomes a poor and poorer one. A declining population guarantees a poverty-stricken nation. When a free market economy does not exist, on top of all that, problems are exacerbated. And the poverty nation is an untaught study. Now, I was going to be able to spend some time on this. Because all these nations do that are in poverty need to produce something that's worth something. And they'll come out of poverty. But no, we send them some more money. So they have the same amount of money to spend on the same amount of goods. And that's called inflation. Well, we know about the China policies. I'm just going to go by this. There are now 119 boys per 100 girls. That's not a good thing. And they're reversing some of this. Let's go to masculine implications. Limiting production of goods. Under the sham of environmentalism and other things, supposing that greenhouse gases are produced by carbon emissions, making the world not difficult to live in, but impossible. They think the world is going to be an impossible place to live. You know, these Armageddon predictions are what drives good conservationist people away from the system, because we don't want to live in a dirty swimming pool either. Prognostications of the future are way, way overstated and probably mostly wrong. In fact, I heard today on the news that for the last 19 years, there has not been any global warming. For the last 19 years. But we still hear it's getting worse. There's something disingenuous going on in our world today. Honesty is just gone. Because, remember, the end justifies the means. If you have a political cause, and you're funded, if you have a certain kind of job and is dependent on a certain kind of scenario, if that scenario turns out not to be true, your job is gone. All right. So lack of energy is disruptive to nearly every sector of life. If there's no gas in the tank. I remember in 70s when we had the crisis of gas. I know we went to the East Coast and we made sure that we never let the gas tank get under a half. Because we may not get some. Because they're regulated by controlling the prices. They learned their lesson. They don't do that anymore. Now they let the prices go up. And we know there are no lines at the gas stations. And we have short of gas, and gas a lot more was then. So lack of energy is disruptive to nearly every sector of life. And I think that's the purpose of some of this stuff. Remember, disruption is part of the ideal. Disruption is purposeful in the Alinsky playbook. One example, the fuel additive regulations spike every spring and every fall when they switch over to the winter blends and to the summer blends. The gas is up now for those reasons. It's all fallacious because, well, it's global warming. We've got to be Okay, limiting production of goods. Limiting work brings about poverty to a nation. Now, I might hurt some of you guys. Unemployment benefits. Now, all these have to be taken with a measure of understanding here. If you pay into something to get something back, that's one thing. But if they just give it out for no reason, okay, I'm going to just run through this. And whenever something is done and you get money for it and you did nothing to get it, you're contributing to the problem. The person is. You remember the needle over here? Is that contributing to the problem? Which way is the needle moving? So unemployment benefits, where you sit at home, don't do a blessed thing, moving the needle in the wrong direction. You could get a little job, go watch people come in at Walmart. You're doing something. Minimum wages. I'm so upset with this. They don't understand how this works. Minimum wages, you pay somebody for a value they don't actually earn. What good is that to the economy? If you want a job that pays $15 an hour, get a job that pays $15 an hour. So mandatory time off of work. And these kind of things, I mean, we have certain holidays and we observe things, and this is really true, like in Europe. In Brazil, you get a month off for December and another month off in January. Not to work, but it's government mandated, you got to be paid. And so what's wonderful? Well, not good for the country. It's not good for the country. So if unfunded pensions, I know people pay into the pension they should get back, but a lot of these pensions that are they've been gotten in there by voting it in, don't know where the money's going to come from. Now, I get a pension at church here. I appreciate that. And I have always thought, I can't sit and do nothing with it. I can't sit at home. I got to do something with it. And that's why I'm teaching this class. I get paid some to do this class, but not the amount of time I spent in it. Understand? So I feel the pressure. I don't want to sit at home and do nothing that contributes nothing to the world. I don't want to be a victim of that. And the disabilities that are not profound, many people are on disability leave because, well, you know, disability pays more than a job would. You got your own stories. Now, I know there are people that can't work. I understand that. There are rooms for that. And then a managed labor market, setting the price of labor rather than what the cost of labor really is. Then we have limiting production by limiting farms, factories, entrepreneurs, businesses, services, which is ridiculous. Agricultural production, restrict regulation of farm programs. I remember my brother in 1980-something, maybe you guys remember the farmers that are here, he was paid not to farm for one whole year. We went to the East Coast in October. Not a good thing. We had thousands and thousands of lands, of acres that were not filled and could have made somebody some money somewhere. But no, the government paid us not to farm. All right, so we have farm regulations, and we have every county has their own offices where you can't do anything except you tell them what you're going to do. So restrict international trading, which is the problem. If you're going to have a free market, make it a free market. Don't just have part of it free. Don't put tariffs on things, protecting ourselves. Regulate by artificial standards productions, ostensibly for safety and so forth. Regulate startups. Can't do that. You got to complete all these forms. Get approvals, buy license permits, and go on and go forth. I got stories for every one of these. Regulate what must be provided, from wages paid to health insurance, how much you can lift, the hours you can work, the coffee breaks, the safe equipment you got to wear, and just go on. I mean, there are so many regulations. Incredible. Land use for production. I talked about this already. Farm factors, entrepreneurs. Examples, water for fish in California is preferred to watering plants that make food. The tiger beetle in Salt Valley is preserved, while the needed housing must move further out, which makes more gas costs to come in. Looking for life on other planets, this is wasting manpower and resources, serious economic impact. Looking for life on other planets when there is none, I tell you that already. On authority of God's word, it's not out there. Looking for clues of the origin of life, I can tell you where it is. Don't have to go out and look. Spend billions of dollars doing this. Looking to colonize another planet when the earth can no longer sustain life. There are people who actually think that. This guy, do I have his name here somewhere? Grunsfeld, astronaut. Single planet species don't survive, he says. Essential to mankind's survival. Stephen Hawking, you know who he is, cosmologist, says the human race should not have all its eggs in one basket or one planet. Got to make plans to be somewhere else. Who's to blame for global warming? I'm going to go through this. I'm running out of time. Fiscal year 2013, which ended in September 30, the U.S. government spent $22 billion, that's with a B, on climate change matters. $22 billion. That's not chump change. Note that not one single one of these dollars ostensibly spent to combat climate change had an iota of impact on the climate. Nearly $2.5 million went to fund the alarmists' campaign that global warming is coming. No wonder the alarmist scientists don't want the gravy train to end. There's some disingenuous here. Wind turbines use magnets made with whatever the word is, a couple of names here, I don't know what they are. They're called rare earth metals. They're mined exclusively in China. They're radioactive, toxic material used to produce these magnets that are put in these windmills. An MIT study estimated that a 2-megawatt wind turbine contains about 752 pounds of rare earth minerals, which are radioactive, which come from China's rare earth industry, including a 5-mile-wide lake of industrial waste. This vast hissing cauldron of chemicals is dumping is the dumping ground for 7 million tons a year of mined rare earth after it has been doused in acid and chemicals and processed through red-hot furnaces to extract its components. Rustling pipelines meander for miles from factories processing rare earths out to the man-made lake where, mixed with water, the foul-smelling radioactive waste from the industrial process is pumped day after day. As the lake of waste grew larger, local farmers told Perry, anything we planted there just withered. Then our animals started to sicken and die. Last year, the United States added 13,000 megawatts of wind-generating capacity, and at least 1.9 million pounds of rare earths were used in the turbines installed in 2012. Now compare that to, same number, the U.S. nuclear industry produces between 4 to 5 million pounds of spent nuclear fuel each year, and don't put it on a lake somewhere. So the United States wind industry most likely created more radioactive waste last year than American entire nuclear industry did. And don't hear that part. While accounting for only 3.3% of electricity generated in the country, and they still haven't found a battery big enough to hold all this electricity. Regulations to prove your life. My wife fell down the stair, remember, last November. You know, the fall wasn't too bad. The surgery was not too bad. But the follow-up literature she's had to fill out on this to tell her how she's getting along and whether she should do, whether she's fallen again or whether she's, you know, would put in a nursing home is incredible. Absolutely incredible. So this is your life. You are being managed by more than 1,000 pages of written regulations. To be honest, that is not nearly enough to cover all the contingency of 300 million people. Trillions of dollars, doctors, nurses, hospitals, pharmaceuticals, insurance companies, so on and so forth. Where there is no regulation, by the way, when the 100 pages run out, since you cannot act on self-interest, someone in an office will decide for you what is best and inform you of the decision to give you aid or not. Again, what was meant to help somebody, meant to help, has become a monster in the lives of people. Production will fall off. Students will opt out of medical school since little medicine would practice. Mostly data entry. People will die unnecessarily. In order to serve you better, pages of questionnaires and explanations for your conduct will be required for treatment to continue. Now, that far is not there. They say, well, this is a voluntary thing. But it's an easy step to say, well, if you don't complete these forms, your insurance will be canceled. Foreign aid has always been a tool of influence to foreign countries to buy a loyal friend, I might say. However, it is hard to assess any long-term benefit of giving money to countries that do not, cannot, will not increase the gross domestic product. They do it the same way individuals do, make and sell something that somebody in the world wants. Bill Ayers calls that good thing that somebody else wants. Helsinki. So as in most cases, the foreign aid going to the countries end up in the numbered accounts in the dictators who demanded the money. Helping the poor country does no more good than giving money to a poor person again and again and again. They will need to become productive and create their own wealth, or they will be in the state of poverty. So that is the condition. I don't know. We need to go through all this. I just thought about, you never want to compare what this is often done. Well, we're making this much in this world, but down in this third world country, they only make this much. Look at the disparity. That's not how you do this. You got to do it within each country. When I graduated from K-State, in the middle paragraph, the graduate engineer would make $100 a week and live comfortably. That was $5,000 a year. A medical doctor could expect double that. He could make 10. But a new car could be bought for $2,500. Now, today, take that times 12. Well, you could buy a car for $25,000, probably the same quality car. So a $100 wage now has moved into a $50,000 wage, probably about what it is. So don't be fooled by numbers. They got to be compared with the context in which the numbers exist. So don't be fooled about these lower wages around the world. They don't make anything, mean anything. Okay. I think these are the last closing ones, I think. This is a secular writer. A society that puts equality, in the sense of equality of outcome, ahead of freedom will end up with neither equality or freedom. The use of force to achieve equality will destroy freedom, and force introduced for good reasons will end up in the hands of people who use it to promote their own interests. On the other hand, a society that puts freedom first will, as happy byproduct, end up with both greater freedom and greater equality. Though a byproduct of freedom, greater equality is not an accident. So we are pleased to know that the nation whose God is the Lord will be blessed. We have not listed all the blessings that have come to the world through the efforts of the United States. That was another lesson. We must somewhat be careful of self-laudation, yet the role of America in the modern world cannot be overlooked. It is highly probable that prosperity alone would make other nations envious of the blessing we have received. However, that blessing is also available to other nations. All right. Thanks for enduring. And you can see we have just introduced the subject. But I think I've given you, or you should have, enough tools to be able to analyze what you see on the news, reading the paper, and think about this. I was out walking yesterday, my rare moment, a walk. When I have nothing else to do, I go walk. I force myself to walk. And I was walking along, I have a nice bike trail close to our house, and I walk a mile along it, and it's wonderful. You got trees over here, and the birds are in the pond, and bicycles are floating by, and, you know, kids are out playing, and I said, what's wrong with this? Isn't this wonderful what the government has wrought? I said, well, maybe. You know, the bike pails, a lot of those are made out of gambling monies, right? Some of this money goes into this pool that they do these recreational things for the community. So it's taking money from the poor and giving it to people, you know, for community services. But I said, you know, I have no idea. And by the way, and that means at this rate where we are right now, I have heard this, that approximately 50% of your income is going to be, it will evaporate out of your account by some tax, half of it. Well, let's just say, let's take, back it up and take 25% of that money and give it back to you. What could you do with it? Maybe, well, we would have something a whole lot better than we have today. See, we have no way of knowing how it would be because we are just accustomed to how it is. But it's amazing. It's amazing what happens when people have the money because they can do the right thing with it and they do things that promote their own family's interest. And it generally isn't bad. Now, I know there's always the outliers that gamble away their money and so forth, but they do that if they have no money. But in the normal process of things, the more money the people have, the more prosperity there will be in the country. The more money the government has, the less prosperity there will be in the country because the government doesn't produce anything. And what they do best at is protect their country through the military. That's their big job, and that's no one else can do that. That's why they have to do it. And they do it with a lot of money. Right, John? A lot of money. A hammer costs a lot of money in the military. But it's a good hammer. That is, I'm what the percentage in Brazil is, but it's like that. You buy the car, and then, oh, now you pay the taxes. Now that's when you decide you can't. All right, so I said that the peak of Americans' economic freedom occurred around the turn of the 18th century into the 20th century, back in 1900, before World War I. So we haven't lived back there. We don't know what it's like. We don't know what it's like to live without an income tax. You know, they had a time when there wasn't an income tax in this world, you know, and it was somehow it functioned. And you were living in a time when you didn't expect the government to do anything for you because you could do it yourself. But now we're to the point, well, my kids can't go to school without a government loan. I can't farm without a government subsidy or, you know, how it goes. I can't start a company because it costs me too much, so I won't. I know somebody, I won't say a name here, but he's an electrician in our church. He works by himself. He needs help. But it's too much trouble to hire somebody. It's too much trouble, too much paperwork, too much cost. Too much things you got to do that has nothing to do with being an electrician. So he just does it himself. So his business stays small. He could probably have 3 or 4 guys working for him. Produce more things for our country, for our families, for our government. More taxes for him to collect. But no, he's going to stick where he is, small, because they want to go through all that. It's too much work. Not worth it. All right. Folks, thank you for a year of... I don't know what it is. I've enjoyed it. I hope you have. I do enjoy studying things I don't know anything about, and that always is fearful to me because I don't know anything about it. And one wise guy, some of you remember Song Lee, used to be the head of the management department at the University of Nebraska. A friend of mine used to play racquetball together a lot. And he says, "Don, why don't you write a book?" He writes a lot of books. "Song, I can't write a book." "Well, yeah, I don't know anything about anything." He says, "Well, that's why you write a book." Because you write a book, you got to learn about something. And you research about something, you learn about it, and then, so that's how my philosophy, and I've used that a lot in my mind. So why am I doing this? And then first of all, I ask, well, can I think of anybody else that would do it? You know, if somebody in our church could do this, like Bill on economics, Bill, go for it. I mean, so I'm not trying to take anybody's thunder here, but I said, well, somebody's got to do it. And some of these subjects become, like this one, to me, this has bothered me for years. And I said, there's got to be a biblical answer to the questions that I have about how things are. And I don't want to, you know, the issue about America and being a Christian nation, that question never was settled for me. I said, well, I don't know, I guess maybe, you know. But I have a better view of it now, fully understanding the sinfulness that's going on in the world, and that God will eventually judge America. Oh, yeah, I had a whole section I didn't give you tonight, because I've got to do it another time. Manfred Kolber, I told you last week, I gave you a couple of his points, explain why God will spare America until the rapture. God will not judge America till the rapture. And he gives these reasons, and I got to do that sometime for you. You guys were on the trip, remember he did that? Yeah. I mean, it's really a wonderful. I mean, this is a guy that came from East Germany as a kid and has a great appreciation for America. And he says these reasons that are really viable, like 80% of America is a Christian of some kind. You know, even though we know they're not necessarily born again. But a lot of those are born again Christians. And the principle that God has always done in scriptures before he judges somebody, takes out the believers. It took Lot out, took Noah out. So the pattern is established. Why would he not take the church out? So I think that the nation will be judged, but it will be judged in the tribulation, along with the Jewish nation will be judged. So, but until then, what we're suffering under, largely, I think, is our judgment that we've inflicted on ourselves as humanity. I know in Romans chapter 1 it says that God gave us over and the wrath of God is demonstrated against those who reject him. But the thing of it is that we started it. Humanity started it. Humanity started it by not obeying God's commands. And then God has no choice but respond to that. And then these judgments on the earth, the illnesses that come out of these things, the deaths that come out of things, those are the judgments. They're not national judgments. They're personal judgments. So I think in one way, we ought to fear more our own judgments, you know, our own humanity, as a group here, our own human human foibles for which God will judge us rather than the judgment of God, because I think God's judgment is not meant for the believer and think we'll be rescued. I think I like that word rather than raptured, be rescued from this judgment that is to come. So I'm going to quit now because I could go on, and it's warm in here tonight, so maybe it's just me. Again, thank you for coming. Thanks for the year. I'll pray and let you all go. Lord, thank you for the wonderful time we've had together these years, these 26 weeks. Lord, we've learned a lot. I've learned a lot. I appreciate more and more what you've done for us, especially done it for our nation and how important it is for us to fulfill the mandate you set forth so clearly in Genesis chapter 1, verse 22, that we should be fruitful, fill the earth with children, and realize that that really is the wealth of the nations. And then also to produce those things that make life better. Lord, realize that this will go on in the millennium. It will go on into probably all eternity as we use the things that you've given us as created beings to be creative ourselves, to produce those things that have value for other humans, probably value even to you. Thank you, Lord, for our weeks together. Bless our summer off. Pray, Lord, for wisdom already to know what we should do in the fall. Give strength for that. Give safety as we travel during the summer months. And for folks that will be doing the same, bless our lives as they interface with others. Lord, we are here in a sinful world. We have a message to proclaim to the lost, and we do not want to forget that and be ready to give a reason for our faith. Again, thank you for our health we have and the joy of being your children and being here tonight. Keep us safe as we go home. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.